Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We end the hour here at The Takeaway with a look at how and why not everyone has easy or equal access to voting.
For some reason in this country, we have had this ethos of rather than kind of opening up the vote and access to the vote, there have been forces in elected office that have sought to make voting harder, not easier.
Vanita Gupta is president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. She worked in the Civil Rights Division at the U.S. Department of Justice during the Obama administration.
Last year, there were 99 bills that had been introduced in over 31 state legislatures to restrict access to the vote. And it takes a lot of different forms.
Those efforts, not all of which have passed, we should mention, have come in the form of enacting tougher voter ID laws, moving polling stations, and most recently,
we have seen a surge of efforts to restrict access to the polls through voter purging that's now been made famous in the Ohio case, where the Supreme Court just recently allowed for people basically to get purged off of the voter rolls if they hadn't voted in the last two federal election cycles.
This practice is known as use it or lose it. And in Georgia, more than 100,000 people were removed from the voting rolls in 2017. At least nine states have a similar policy. Also in Georgia, 53,000 voters have been placed on a pending list. That means their eligibility to vote is being reviewed. And this, too, disproportionately affects people of color.
And what we are doing is contacting them to make sure that they know what their rights are and what their recourse is to having their vote counted. I think the concern is that, you know, many of them will think that they need to stay out of this election, and we are trying to encourage them to show up to vote using the provisional ballot, and then we're going to have to be keeping tabs on what happens with those provisional ballots. There are a number of civil rights groups like the Lawyers Committee, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Campaign Legal Center, and others that will be kind of primed for pursuing litigation if and as unlawful things take place after the election. But right now, we're kind of in the lead up to it, making sure that those voters know their rights and know how to be counted.
Well, Vanita, how do we determine what is an appropriate tool that the Secretary of State's office can use to make sure that the voter rolls are clean, that they don't have, you know, multiple problems with voters at different addresses, that we don't have any type of fraud going on, that dead people aren't all those things that you hear about elections? How do you decide which of those things is actually what the Secretary of State's office is supposed to be doing to protect the integrity of the election versus one that we determine is suppressive in its intent?
Yeah, look, Secretaries of States have been running elections for a long time, and long before the Supreme Court sanctioned use it or lose it mechanism that they sanctioned in Ohio's voter purging, Secretaries of State were maintaining their roles and making sure that dead people were no longer on the rolls and the like. And of course, Secretaries of State need to be able to make sure that their voter rolls are up to date. But voting in America had never been a use it or lose it right. And it is not a privilege handed to some. It is a right that is conferred on U.S. citizens. And there are measures written into the National Voter Registration Act that was enacted really primarily in the 90s to ensure greater registration opportunities for more vulnerable communities. And that's what Secretaries of State have been relying on for years through election cycle after election cycle to make sure that the voter rolls were cleaned. There have been a lot of studies, bipartisan studies, done to try to detect mass voter fraud, and not a single one has ever revealed mass voter fraud. It was part of the reason why you saw Secretaries of States from states as wide-ranging as Mississippi to California protesting when the president established this Pence-Kobach Voter Suppression Commission, as I call it, headed by the vice president and Chris Kobach, the Kansas Secretary of State, who's had a longstanding agenda to restrict voting rights. Ultimately, the commission got brought down through litigation, but there was zero evidence whatsoever to back up the president's claim that 3 to 5 million people had voted illegally in the 2016 election. And so this is what's dangerous about where we're at, which is this myth of voter fraud is perpetuating a series of policies that result in the suppression of the vote in certain communities. But I think we just have to admit that this has long been a very racialized agenda. The seeds of this have been rooted in Jim Crow and slavery, and that we are today contending with a whole slew of different mechanisms by which people have been seeking to restrict the right to vote among communities that are perceived to be heavily Democratic. And those increasingly in our polarized country are communities of color.
A number of conservatives, Republicans will say, look, there's no evidence that we are suppressing the vote. And the fact is, anybody can show up and vote. They can fill out a provisional ballot. We're not denying anyone access to the polls. This is not the 1960s. And the fact that Democrats are blaming this on voter suppression, really what they should be looking at is the reason why their message isn't resonating with voters that they want to get to the polls.
That is conflating voter turnout with the actual ability to have people who show up at the polls have their votes counted. And there has been ample evidence, and federal court after federal court after federal court has found states that have engaged in intentional racial discrimination in enacting restrictive measures to prevent people from voting as recently as just this past year. There is a long history of voter suppression in this country. It has taken a whole range of forms, from literacy tests and poll taxes and grandfather clauses to the kind of unlawful purging, overly restrictive ID requirements that we see today. We have to be really vigilant to fight back on voter suppression, but I also think that the other message has to be that people need to show up and exercise this right. It has been a right that people have died for, that was secured by the blood, sweat, and tears of advocates and activists that came before us. And I think in this election in particular, which may be the most important election in our lifetimes, everything is at stake. Fundamental American values are at stake, and it's why there is such a groundswell of activism and get out the vote efforts that people feel really, engage in making sure that there's much higher turnout.
Vinita Gupta is the president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. All right, one more thought for my brain this hour. I'm having some flashbacks to 2016. Back then, as now, we were watching a split-screen election. One shows crowds waiting to get into Donald Trump rallies. The other shows long lines at early polling centers filled with voters of color. And just like 2 years ago, we're trying to interpret which will tell us more about who will win on Election Day. Those lines at early voting places didn't predict victory for Hillary Clinton in key states like Florida or North Carolina. And voters who never even attended a MAGA rally did get to the polls for Donald Trump. But midterm elections are more sensitive to fluctuations in turnout. Fewer people overall vote in non-presidential years, which means even minor changes in the composition of the electorate can have massive consequences. In other words, even just a few hundred voters showing up to vote who don't normally vote could determine the outcome of a bunch of races. No one knows what will happen if, as Professor McDonald suggested, we have higher voter participation than any midterm election since 1914. But what we do know is this. The Trump era has engaged and enraged voters like none in modern times. And even as we may hit record levels of turnout in 2018, I suspect we're going to be flirting with record voter engagement for the foreseeable future. You can always find us on Facebook and leave a comment there. Also, if you missed anything or you want to listen back again, check out our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Walter. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by Progressive Insurance, offering its Home Quote Explorer, designed to provide information about available home insurance options in one place. More information at progressive.com.